This podcast isn't about Cody, Carrie Mae Parker's ex-boyfriend. Have I said that recently? The last episode was about him, and, well, so is this one. The next one also has a lot to do with him, actually, but overall, Buried is not about Cody. If only it were that simple. So I want to introduce this episode by urging you to withhold judgment on Cody until he has had a chance to speak for himself. I need to make sure there's no confusion about our focus overall. We're not throwing around accusations or labeling people as suspects until they've been identified as such by law enforcement. Personally, there's at least two reasons I'm not doing that. One is I'm not a cop, and the other is that I can't, even if I want to. I'm bound by our news division's editorial standards and National Public Radio's ethics handbook. Google it, it's online. The list of stuff we're not supposed to do, it's, like, endless. And that's a good thing, because all these names we've mentioned are real people. Most of them are still alive, with jobs and families and reputations. And being linked to a woman's disappearance is just about the last thing anybody wants. If you're looking for wild speculation about cold cases, there's dozens of podcasts with bigger budgets and hosts who don't mumble as much as I do. But I hope you stick around, because we're about to delve into some very sensitive subject matter, and we're going to try to do it right. Without causing further harm to anyone, Cody included, and sticking to what's in the public interest. We're betting that people listen to public radio podcasts for precisely these reasons. I hope that's why you're listening now. Which brings me to why I mention all of this here, in the episode's intro. Is because we're about to talk about Carrie's ex-boyfriend in a brand new way, about something nobody's ever reported before. It's about a major development from nearly a year before this podcast started, and months before I met any of these people or even knew who Cody was. It was on November 30th, 2016, in an interrogation room at the Tishomingo Police Department in Tishomingo, Oklahoma, when a detective from the Hunt County Sheriff's Office accused Cody of murdering Carrie Mae Parker and burying her. From KETR Public Radio for Northeast Texas, this is Buried, an investigative series and podcast about the 1991 disappearance of Carrie Mae Parker, and about some of the things her ex-boyfriend Cody told people over the next 25 years. Before I say anything else about Cody's interview, you should know that he hasn't been arrested or charged in connection with Carrie's disappearance. He's described himself as a suspect, and a person of interest, it depends on who you ask, so it's not some big secret. He also describes himself as innocent, as someone who loved Carrie and doesn't know what happened to her. Although he did think she might have gone to become a sex slave in Mexico, whatever that means. One of the people he told that theory to is a lady named Janice, who Cody dated in Oklahoma recently. But Janice told me that even after all these years, Carrie Mae Parker is very much on Cody's mind.
Hello.
Hey, is this Janice?
Yes, there is.
I'm a reporter for a radio station in Hunt County, KETR. She told me that you might be willing to talk to me about Cody.
Yes, sir.
Do you have a second now? Is it a good time?
Yes, sir, I do.
So, did you date him? Is that right?
Sir, I lived with him for a year.
What year was that?
From May 14th, 2014 to May 5th of 2015.
That's very specific.
Well, he told me about this case when we first got together. He said that, you know, they lived together for 3 years and busted up, and they were trying to blame him for her death. And this is what he told me. He said that all she talked about was wanting to go to Mexico and be a sex slave. Okay? He said that they found her car in her ex-boyfriend's driveway, which was a Mexican. And, I mean, I don't know if he's read the post about Carrie or the website about Carrie. I don't know if he's read that or not, but why would you tell me if you knew to date that they had not found her car, why would you tell me that they found it in her boyfriend's driveway?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never heard that before.
And I've laid awake many hours thinking about this. And when we lived in Tishomingo, he worked for a woman named Joyce Stowers. She owns Blessing Gravel. They're in Tishomingo.
Okay.
And he works nights a lot of times. And when we really started having trouble, like fussing back and forth, he tried to get me to go to work with him several times. And he was the only one out there at them rock pits at night by himself.
Ooh.
And I'm like, oh, well, hell no, I ain't going to work with you. Because, I mean, he could have just dug a hole and buried me, and nobody would have ever found me.
So you thought that, did you know about Carrie before then?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I knew about Carrie. I didn't know the extent of it until I got out of jail last year in August. Well, yeah, in 2015, I got out of jail.
Oh, I just meant, like, did you get that feeling because you thought about that might have been what happened to Carrie, or you just, like, independently thought she would...
We were on dope and stuff, and it's like you get an idea in your head, and it's like, you know, it's real. It's just real, real.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But, I mean, I never feared Cody.
Yeah.
I never had any... That's why I'm saying this is, it's just so weird because I would never think that about Cody.
Okay.
You know, whenever, until I read all the stuff about it,
yeah.
Me and my ex-sister-in-law pulled it up one day and I read every link to her missing.
Uh-huh.
And it blew my mind because he's just withering away. It's like she's haunting him or something.
Wait, oh, he, she is?
He looks horrible. The man looks totally horrible. I mean, which I know part of it's the drugs, too, but, yeah, that's bad. He looks bad.
But you think that he's disturbed by what happened to her?
That's what I'm saying. It's haunting him. Yeah, I do. I really do.
Do you think it's because he feels guilty or just, like, it's following?
I do, because, like I said, a lot of times I would catch him staring. But I would be thinking, I wonder what's on his mind, because it would be a deep, deep, I mean, just... You could tell that he was far, far away.
And yet, Janice finds the idea of Cody hurting anybody very hard to believe. And she's not a fan of his, so it's not coming from any defensive impulse as far as I can tell. In fact, she got in touch with Patricia, Carrie's sister, after the breakup, to report some suspicions, but it's still hard to believe.
Well, I had put something on Facebook about him, and Patricia commented on it. Okay, then she blocked me or couldn't talk to her anymore.
Okay.
Because it started out as... Evidently, something, you don't know me or you don't know him that well. My sister, and she blocked me. I couldn't comment on her comment. And I always remembered her name, Patricia Gager. And after I got out of jail, I messaged her. After me and my ex-sister-in-law read all the links of it, of her missing person, and I got in contact with Patricia and provided her with everything I knew, his social security number, recent pictures of him, just whatever I could tell her, you know?
But that wasn't the only thing that made Janice start to wonder. Other comments from Cody made her uneasy.
Here's something else. And he definitely won't talk to you. He's my ex-husband. Before we got married or got together, okay, the guy that they worked with,
yeah,
Gary Armstrong, has a logging company.
Okay.
Okay, his little brother worked with Cody and my boyfriend, Pete. Whenever me and my ex-sister-in-law were going through this, Rusty told me, he said, you know, Janice, he said, whenever we'd be, Jimmy, he said, Cody, kind of like a truth serum. And he said, man, y'all just don't know some of the stuff I've done. Just, you know, just talking. And he was going to say something to Rusty, but he never got around to it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just saying, I've done some shit, you know. So, and we were kind of thinking, you know, maybe that's what he was talking about, you know.
Yeah. What else did he tell you about Carrie? Anything?
Nope, that's it. That's all he said. It's just like she wanted to go and be a sex slave. And I'm thinking to myself, that really didn't sound right, you know, because there are some foreign mothers out there that just don't care how she could just go off and leave her kids like that.
So, just to recap, like, the only thing that Cody really told you was that they wanted to pin it on him and that the Mexican boyfriend had the car, but they found it there.
Yes, he told me that she talked about going to Mexico and being a sex slave and that they needed to question her ex-boyfriend because they found her car in his driveway. Now, he did tell me a little bit about the night of the party.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he just said that... they had busted up. They were having trouble, and they were having a party somewhere there in Quinlan, and that there was a girl named Cactus there that he had danced with.
Yeah.
And after that, he had bought Carrie a drink, and they were sitting there talking, and Carrie spoke up and said something to the effect of sleeping with her.
Cactus.
And he said, yeah. He said, I intend to, and she dashed the drink in his face. That's what Cody told me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then nothing.
Nothing. I mean, that was it. That's all he's told me. He never said anything about them leaving together or him throwing her in. He never mentioned any of that. He just said that they got into the little argument about Cactus and that she dashed the drink in his face.
It immediately seemed to me that Janice had heard from Cody something very similar to the rumors that Glenn heard years earlier. That Carrie threw a drink in Cody's face over a woman named Cactus at a party, possibly on March 17, 1991. Over 20 years later, Carrie's firstborn son Brian got a hold of Cody, and Cody told him about a party in a place called Hawk Cove. Glenn thought that was kind of crazy because the rumors he'd been hearing were basically the same, except that part about Carrie driving off into the sunset, or to Mexico, or whatever. In the last episode, Glenn started wondering about Cody after some odd comments years later. He said Cody freaked out on his best friend Todd Langford. But then Cody told Brian in a recorded phone call that Todd was standing there when Carrie threw a drink in his face. So it seemed important to find Todd. I obsessed over finding him for months. I thought his memories of either of these two events were crucial. But there wasn't any address on record for him, or a number. Glenn had lost touch with him too, him and plenty of other people after cleaning up and getting off drugs. He avoids that crowd now. But I asked him to try anyway to tell me what he knew about Carrie's friends, especially Jim, the guy who hosted a party in Hawk Cove where Carrie was rumored to be in attendance.
There's a guy named Jim. I can't remember his last name. I knew a lot of my sister's friends just by associates. You know, they really wasn't big buddies of mine, but I seen them around her and Cody and Leonard Good and Arvin Good. Every time I'd come to visit her, we'd get together, you know, they'd be there from time to time. As a matter of fact, since she's missing, there's been several of them that I haven't seen again.
Some of the other guys included Carrie's ex-boyfriend, Leonard. They lived in an RV park behind a tire shop in central Quinlan.
The tire store was off of 34, right behind Easy Mart there.
The Easy Mart is where Glenn says he last saw Carrie around the 1st of March. He says she was crying after a fight with Cody. In retrospect, Glenn says this should have been the first sign of trouble. I can tell he regrets not doing something then, although I'm not sure I would have liked what that was.
But for a long time, about 8 years, I didn't know that Cody may have been involved. Because every time I was around Cody and Carrie, he always acted cool, and I told he was a cool guy, you know what I'm saying? Until that one incident.
That's one of the things that still is hard to get my head around sometimes, that the family didn't suspect Cody at all, at least not all of them. But one of the big turning points in Glenn's mind was when he witnessed Cody shouting at their mutual friend Todd after he brought up Carrie's name. Then Brian heard the stuff about a drug dealer, possibly from Mexico, possibly a Hispanic guy from Alabama, possibly dead now, burying her in a car at Crowbar Bottom. I asked Glenn if he could help me find it, but he couldn't, not really. Glenn had heard about an area called Alligator Woods or Alligator Bottom, and it was in the same general area as the supposed Crowbar Bottom. In fact, Glenn says that before the day that hitchhiker named Stacy pointed him toward Cody's property, he'd heard rumors about the alligator place. He says that's where he thought Stacy was taking him that night, to show him where his sister was buried. Instead, they ended up at Cody's parents' property, right off Main Street in Quinlan. And all this happened after Carrie's dad said the stuff about her being afraid of a big hole Cody was digging. Then these rumors about a party where Carrie and Cody got into a loud argument over another woman. And then Cody starts telling people she went to Mexico to become a sex slave. He told some of his future girlfriends about that too, apparently.
I know she's gone, and no matter what happens, it's not going to bring her back. And I really don't care about involving all these other people. I know what some did and some didn't do through personal experiences, but as far as really knowing whether they had a hand in it or not, I don't. But through a lot of Cody's own words, and then you got girlfriends, ex-girlfriends, saying, hey, she's right there. Well, hey, that's Cody Saunders' place. Well, Cody disappears, then the tire shop closes down. They moved the trailer and everything they lived in, tore the building down. Then the Saunders moved their business and disappeared from that area.
After they left, Glenn started to pick up on some other odd behavior. This time coming from Cody's family.
When we were staying in Point, this was right after that happened, and I kept it in my head. It kind of worried me for a while, because, you know, I never really suspected Cody at all. He went to his daddy's to take him some money. But he was a really dark-complected man. And every time I come to see Cody and Carrie, I was always a respectful young man. You know, we've never had no falling outs or disrespect or nothing like that. But when the man turned around and he seen me standing there, the man right there turned white. And you can see the fear in his eyes. You know, he was looking at me, and I'm kind of scratching my head. Jim Songer, Cody's daddy.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, that kind of bothered me for a long time. Why was that guy so scared when he seen me? You know, I ain't never threatened him or anything like that. Why would he react like that? And then I got to put the two together, what Cody come out of his mouth, and I'm like, it sounds like to me he knew what happened. He definitely knew something I didn't know at the time. He had that reaction to me, his daddy, when he saw me. I mean, you know, it'd be like, oh, shit, that's her brother. Of course, I think Jim knew back in the day. He probably would have knew Cody done it. I probably would have killed him. Because I had that type of mentality and temper back then. And I felt so bad for years because in my heart, I think that if I would have did something to Cody right then, when I seen Carrie at Easy Mart with what he tried to do, that maybe she'd still be here today. You get all these things that add up, but nobody else really had a motive. Well, they're on the in and out. They're on the in and out, and all of a sudden she's gone. Then the man admits Hobbit's mouth on another, which buries him even deeper. The only person knows what happened to her, and he's dead. Now, how would you know that dead person knew what happened to her? Unless that means that you know also.
I just think stuff over here because
I know the man knows something. For a long time, I thought he was the perpetrator, but I'm not really sure. But I know he knows.
I've heard this frequently from Carrie's family members. There's certainty that Cody knows something, but hesitancy about accusing him of actually killing her. That started to make more sense over the months that followed. Cody hung out with a rough crowd, and one in which people knew quite a bit of information about everybody's day-to-day activities. And it is hard to imagine that people close to Carrie at the time would be oblivious. Was Cody one of those people? We don't know for sure, mainly because it's not clear when this party happened.
And see, Cody, he keeps changing his story all the time.
Like what?
First, he thought Carrie worked up there and ended up going to Mexico. And
yeah, what is this Mexico story? Does it make any sense?
I think it's something he made up at the time when he was younger. To kind of throw everybody off the trail.
One thing that we touched on in the last episode is this weird incident in Glenn's memory in which Cody starts screaming at his best friend for mentioning Carrie. This was later when he and Cody were living near each other.
I don't know. It's like Todd maybe knew something too because the way Cody was really violent about it, and I heard that Todd was at the party too. And ain't it funny that he said, and see, I didn't know about the party until after these events happened with Cody and Point. Then, 4 or 5 years later, I hear rumors about the party and what happened and what went down. Then all of a sudden, I hear out of Cody's mouth that most of the events did go down. The only thing he ain't admitting to is what happened to her. Everything else has been proven to be true. So, the rumor that I found out, why wouldn't all of it be true? If 3 of the things that happened there happened and it actually came out of his mouth because I heard it, then the fact what he said when he jumped on Todd Langford, well, you know, none of us know for sure. I am sure that Cody knows more than he's telling. Because usually when a person gets it that angry, they don't have much control what comes out of their mouth.
He supposedly said that the only person who knew what happened to Carrie was Jim, and Jim's dead. No last name, but it seems plausible that it's Jim Wilburn, who hosted a party in Hawk Cove. And he is dead. It was there that Cody says he and Carrie got into it over a woman known only as Cactus.
Do you know who Cactus is?
somebody up in the new business?
I've heard of them. I think it's a girl, right?
Yeah.
If I saw her face, I would probably know her.
Okay.
What's her name?
Cactus. I mean, it's not...
It's somebody that my sister hung with back in the day. I remember seeing her, but I don't know a whole lot about her. I mean, she just one of them people that was around. I come see my sister 10 or 15 minutes, and I'd see her. She's there. Well, you don't really learn a lot about them. If they carry the type that she there, your business right in front of everybody.
Yeah.
If you made her mad. And when it comes to something like that, I imagine she got pretty high.
So this is why the party is so important to me. Was that the last time anyone saw Carrie, or was it something that happened long before she vanished? But I wasn't the only one interested in that party.
You know that they interviewed Cody, the police, last year? You might know from Brian, maybe he told
you? No, nobody told me.
A detective from the Hunt County Sheriff's Office got to Cody 6 months earlier. It was the first time that I'm aware of that any law enforcement officer questioned him about Carrie's disappearance. Actually, I'm almost certain it's the first time they questioned a person who wasn't related to Carrie by blood or marriage. I'll refer you to them to confirm that. They don't answer my calls. But I haven't met anyone outside the family except Cody, who says police talked to him. Which in and of itself was inconceivable to me. Back then, anyway. The interview was conducted in Tishomingo, Oklahoma on November 30th, 2016. Turns out that conversation was recorded. And I tried my hardest to get a hold of that audio for you, but it didn't work out. I got something else I'll tell you about in a minute. To Glenn, Cody's version is so similar to the rumors he heard, there just has to be something to it.
What I'm really thinking in my heart, she never came home to that party, and it's been proven that she's been there. Because according to him, my nephew on the phone, and I listened to part of the recording,
He
admitted that that party actually really happened, and that Carrie really did pour the drink. Now, how would I hear these rumors on the street, and all of a sudden I find out part of it's true, why wouldn't all of it be true?
I'm going to get back to Janice, Cody's ex-girlfriend from earlier, but I need to rewind time just a little bit to explain how that connection occurred. The recording from Glenn you just heard is from May 2017. This is Patricia, Carrie Mae Parker's younger sister, on the same day.
He also mentioned this guy who you've mentioned before, too. What's his name? Is it Todd?
Yeah, did he tell you that story when he was living next door to Cody?
Yeah. That's the other. That's crazy, too. He also said, so this is interesting. Maybe I'm mixing, or maybe everyone is getting their stories mixed up on this one, but that she was put in something called alligator bottoms or something like that. You ever heard of that?
There's so many different stories.
I know. But the interesting thing was that when I showed him the map that Brian gave me about the Crowbar Bottoms, you know? He said
Crowbar Bottoms, that was it.
Yeah, he said that was the area of the alligator place, too.
Oh. And maybe they got the names crossed or something.
I don't know. Exactly.
See, I don't know anything about the actual areas and what they were nicknamed. And,
I know.
Because I was never around.
Yeah. I mean.
I still think Cody. Did Glenn tell you he thinks Cody knows, too?
He said he thinks Cody knows. He wasn't sure enough to say if Cody did it or not, but...
Yeah.
Another mystery was who Carrie was staying with before she went missing. Patricia explained to me that one of the last things her father told them about was that Carrie was staying with a couple with the names Ken and Rhonda. Patricia believes these people are a different couple named Kent and Vonda. Kent is dead, and Vonda denies knowing Carrie. Patricia and Brian are both skeptical, but I'm not sure why.
I mean, I don't know. You know, even though like Glenn was a little bit, you know, he was saying too, like, don't expect too many people to talk, cause like,
and they don't,
cause they don't know what's gonna happen to them too. You know, if they do, and it's like,
mm-hmm.
Is that like in our heads? You know what I mean, or is that real? Like, is it something?
No, it's been real. You know, and why didn't anybody ask? If I'm living with a friend of mine and I don't show up, somebody's going to ask, what's up? Where's she at?
Of course.
Nobody asked.
Hey, here's a question. How sure are we that it's even true that no police report was technically filed with Greenville, you know, or with Hunt County or whatever?
I'm not sure that it wasn't.
Yeah.
Because, see, back then, they had it written in writing, so it could have been lost.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Or
or
it could have been known, and they just didn't write it.
But like,
no, I know it was known. Let me change that around. It was known. They just didn't do nothing.
Yeah.
And no. I can prove to you that they knew about it because Glenn had a discussion about it with the popo.
So after Brian and Glenn, I asked Patricia who else might be willing to talk to me. One that seemed obvious was Brandy, who you've heard from in the second and third episodes.
Who do you think I should talk to next? Maybe Brandy? If she will, I don't know.
I'm hesitant to even get into this because I don't want to add to the drama, but the only way the next few episodes will make any sense at all is if I quickly go through their history. Patricia and Brandy, at this point, were basically estranged. Neither had anything nice to say about the other, and Patricia wasn't all that thrilled with the idea of me talking to her. That would later seem odd, because other than Patricia, Brandy is the one who's been most vocal about her mom's case. She's the one who filed that missing person report in 2010, after Patricia discovered there wasn't one on file. But they don't work together like that anymore.
I don't... She was a kid. I mean, she was...
Five? Maybe. But she was like, pushing the issue, though, wasn't she? Like, kind of with you? Or back in the day, like...
Well... She asked questions, but she didn't really, like, do any investigation.
Yeah, okay. Well,
I think she kind of probably, I mean, you can go talk to her. I don't care. Her and
I
don't talk anymore.
Why is that?
You know, we just don't talk because we clash. She's gotten offended at me questioning people or making posts, you know, or, you know, and trying... Wait a minute, you're sitting back on the backside telling me what to do, but you're not over here helping me do anything. That shit don't fly with me.
Yeah, sure.
You know, so we've had a couple of verbal chats against each other, and I just, you know, I can't deal with it. You know, you would have think that someone would appreciate you trying to find out the truth.
Yeah, sure.
Rather than ridicule you every time you do something.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, and I think a lot of it has to do with how she deals with the loss of her mom and
really?
Never having any closure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to talk to her, I'm sure she'll talk to you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, Brian suggested at one point, but maybe you're right that it's not the most important because she's so young.
Right, and she couldn't. I don't think that she could give you really any more information than any of the of us others have.
Yeah. What about your younger
but
sister?
If you want to talk to her, I'm cool. She don't really know nothing either. She hasn't been involved. She says that she blocked out her childhood and that she didn't really know Glenn and Carrie. So if she didn't know them, I guess she just don't really care.
Okay. Well. To each their own.
So it was sort of a minefield when I started contacting these people. But in her defense, Patricia never objected after I met anybody. At least not other people in the family. And like I've said before in this podcast, I think that speaks volumes that the whole family has been willing to speak to me. On that note, again, a year before recording this, here's me calling up Brandy for the first time ever. It's hard to imagine a more awkward introduction. Sorry.
Hello.
Hey, is this Brandy?
Yes.
Hey, my name is George Hale. I'm a reporter for the NPR station in Northeast Texas. I don't know if Brian ever mentioned me before.
Oh, no, he didn't.
Okay. I spoke to him at length about your mother. So we're trying to do sort of a pretty big story about it. About her disappearance, I mean. I was wondering if you would be willing to speak with me about it. I know it's totally out of the blue and random, but...
Yeah, it's out of the blue, but yeah, it's fine. She's been missing for, like, 26 years now, and my aunt decided to make it as public as possible 7 years ago, so there's nothing really that surprises me anymore. I mean, I logged on to Facebook one morning in 2010, and I have a friend's request with my mother's name on it. It doesn't get any weirder than that.
Your mom's name on it? Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. That's really weird. Yeah, so I
break the ice. It's not weird for me.
Okay, good. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, true. Okay. Well, and, you know, we've requested like police records and, you know, we just really want to go deep into this, you know, the situation and especially from the perspective of, the county and how the county handles things like this too.
What I was told is that whenever she turned up missing, my grandpa, he did report it to local, I think, Quinlan authorities.
Yeah.
But they said that they had to report it to the last place that she was seen, which was Terrell. I think the last place she was seen was at her work. And so they reported it to Terrell, and Terrell only did a welfare check. And I guess nobody in my family really followed up to see if it was a welfare check versus a missing persons report.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out, I was 23, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty chaotic for me whenever I found out because I just had a baby. And it was, and then, like, I don't know if it was my brother or my aunt told me that there was never actually a missing persons report filed. And as soon as I found out, the day I found out, I started making phone calls because it just, I was under the impression my entire life that all of the appropriate avenues were followed and that she had just never been found. And at that point, I was just totally shocked. And I called, I think I started with Hunt County, and Hunt County gave me a really big hassle. And the reason that I started with Hunt County is because I had heard, I had been told a lot of rumors by family that local authorities in Quinlan may have been involved in her disappearance because she... I mean, I'm sure you know plenty about her history, but she wasn't around good people, and I didn't, from what I'd heard, it didn't sound like it was a good idea for me to go to Quinlan. And Hunt County, they gave me a runaround when I called. They were saying the same thing about how it had to be filed in the place where she was missing.
Oh, really?
Or the place that she lived, they told me, and that was in Hunt County, or in Quinlan.
Right.
And I just kept pushing and pushing, and I'm relentless when it comes to that stuff. I know that everybody has exhausted everything, and they finally, like, they had made phone calls. They told me they were going to have to call me back, and I guess they talked to their supervisor or chief or whatever, and they finally said, okay, given the circumstances surrounding her disappearance, we're going to have to take your report. So they did take it, and I think I also engaged the Texas DPS. I sent a whole bunch of emails related to that, tried to engage the Texas Rangers. I mean, when Hunt County gave me the runaround, I just started notifying everybody I could possibly think of.
And yeah.
After that, my aunt is, my aunt kind of took over from there and just kind of went a whole other direction with it. And
one of the first things I wanted to know was if it was true that she had sort of bowed out of the search for her mom. I was surprised when she said basically yes.
After several years, I mean, my aunt, she really didn't deal with my mother's being missing until I filed the report and it was out there, and she didn't have kids or anything to do. And I had dealt with it my whole life, and I have a family, and I was exhausted by it. And so I've pretty much just for the last several years kept myself as far away from it as possible. But
yeah. Well, that's understandable for sure. I hope you don't mind my bringing it all back up at least briefly.
No, you're fine.
Again, I don't want to make things worse for them by bringing all this up. It's not going to be a regular feature of the podcast. But it's important to understand why in the coming episodes, my role is half journalist, half diplomat, transferring information between them. Not ideal, but at least they were both willing to talk to me, if not each other. Another thing that's useful about hearing everything multiple times is you catch more in each version. And I never heard Brandy's description of the Hunt County Sheriff's Office refusing to take a missing person report immediately. That's a pretty big problem for them, if it's true. Pretty much anyone at any police agency in the country knows that a missing person report should be taken as soon as possible, be investigated immediately. Time is obviously, you know, an important factor. But here, according to Brandy, Hunt County actually blew her off at first. I've offered more than once, by phone and by email, for someone from the Hunt County Sheriff's Office to weigh in on these things. No response so far. Another thing that isn't going to make a lot of sense unless I clarify it is Patricia's use of Facebook. Like Janice said on the phone, Patricia initially tracked her down on the social media site, told her to check out Cody's background, and then blocked her. This is basically par for the course for her and the primary means of investigating her sister's disappearance and communicating with like-minded people.
There's been a lot of drama around the social media presence that my mother has now, which started, as I told you on the phone the other day, I want to say maybe 2011, 2012. I was at work. I was on break. And I'm logging on to my Facebook, and I see a friend request, and it's from Carrie Parker with my mom's picture. And I was like, I knew that it wasn't my mother, but I'm like, well, who would do such a cruel thing to me? Like, that just seemed like a really cruel joke, and I was extremely upset. And I come to find out later that day that my aunt had started a Facebook page for her. And I guess it was supposed to be for like missing person awareness. And like, I understand that her intentions were good, but the way that she put it out there initially, didn't give me any fair warning or heads up or anything. It was shocking to me. And then she eventually changed the name of it to Missing Carrie Parker or something like that. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine how that must have affected anybody? How could anybody just be like, okay, I just got this friend's request from somebody who's impersonating my mother, who's been missing for 20 plus years. And I don't think that she still understands why that upset me so much. Mm-hmm. But that's okay. But she put a lot of energy and a lot of effort into it. And I know that she cares, and she's always had good intentions. But the way that she handled the page, the way that she talked to other people, she's very, very confrontational and very aggressive. And she made a lot of people mad. And it seemed like there was a lot more drama around my mother's name than there should have been. And it bothered me a lot. And it's hard for me to articulate why it bothered me a lot, other than it's my mother. There are very few people that can speak for her, that can represent her. And seeing her represented in such a negative light, and not her negatively, but hearing the person who is being her voice being so negative to others, I didn't want that to impact the way people felt about my mother. Mm-hmm. I didn't want that negative connotation tied to her when people thought Carrie Parker. There was the whole, the sheriff makes, and she's been so... she's been so impatient and so just, she's been rude to them. So then she started a Facebook page that was to unseat Sheriff Meeks because she didn't like the way that it was being handled. And I'm like, no, I don't want anything to do with this. She blocked me on social media.
Now that all that is in better context, one of those Facebook friends is a woman named Janice. She recently dated Cody, Carrie's ex, so I thought she seemed like a good place to start to find out about what Cody's been up to lately. I knew I needed to meet him eventually, but I didn't know where to start. Despite blaming Cody for a lot of problems in her life, with good reason, by the way, she finds it very difficult to believe he was capable of murdering someone, which made me feel a lot better about making an appointment to meet Cody in person. But first, I wanted to meet her.
So I guess maybe just get your name on there first.
My name is Janice Height.
Okay. And your connection to this whole thing is you had the joy of dating Cody Songer, right?
Yes, sir. I dated him for a year. Well, I lived with him for a year.
And is he like so charming or what?
Yes, he was. He was. I don't know. He was suave.
Yeah.
You might say. Had a way with ladies. He was not shy at all. Very attentive to a woman's needs or whatever, you know. He's just, that's what's so mind-boggling to all this, you know.
You never heard of Carrie Parker before?
Well, whenever me and Cody got together, he told me that he was a suspect of her disappearance.
Okay. How did that come up?
I guess maybe he was like afraid that I would leave him and wouldn't find out, if I found out what the depth of it was, that I might leave him or something. Yeah. I really don't know. I really can't say.
But he definitely brought it up or whatever.
Yes, he brought it up.
I mean, I could understand why you would tell someone that.
He had told me that just the little bit he did tell me was that, she had always talked about going to Mexico and being a sex slave. And that was kind of odd because, I mean, this woman's got three children that she loved very much, you know. I found this out afterwards. And I had went to jail in 2015, and once I lost everything I owned behind that man. We were living in Oklahoma, and we were having trouble. We had gotten on drugs, and we were having trouble real bad. And he suggested that I come to Texas to visit with two of my children and two of my grandbabies. 2 days after I got here, he moved a woman in my home, and he sold my travel trailer while I was, well, after it was right after I got out, the day I got out of jail, he moved it. He hooked onto it and moved it, and then a couple of weeks later, he sold it.
Okay, yeah, where to begin? First of all, why did you move to Oklahoma?
With him, behind a job.
Okay. What made him leave his last job here, you know?
Hang on just 1 second.
Maybe I don't remember.
I was in a coma, and it just...
Oh, right, yeah. Well. Yeah.
A man cut my throat and my chest, and I died in the kitchen floor and in the ambulance.
Who was that?
Pete Curry, the one that introduced me to Cody.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, it's just something, I'm a magnet to bad relationships, but I'm 49 years old, and I've learned more in the last 2 years than I learned in 47.
So he taught you all that?
Just the bad relationships I've been in.
So, Cody's friends, good to know. He's got any other good friends like that around?
The ones he hangs with in Oklahoma is not... I mean, they're not reputable people.
Yeah.
Thugs, drug heads.
Yeah. Yeah, so like... Yeah, I mean, I obviously don't really care about, like, some small-town drug nonsense. But, like, but, you know, because of the connections with the cops and stuff, like, out there in Quinlan and stuff, it sort of, that's what interests me more.
Well, okay, he did say that he supplied Quinlan, Terrell, and all of West Tewakene with the dope.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And the story that I had heard was that they were running drugs.
Yeah, I don't know what. Do they make money off of this or what? Like,
we can check the newspapers.
Yeah, we're going to look up all the old newspapers from back then. Okay. So, that's in fact, that's what we're going to do today, but then I thought maybe we should talk to you instead.
Does Patricia know that y'all had come to talk to me?
She knows I talked to you. I don't know if she knows that we're coming out here, but I'll tell her.
No, I talked to Patricia.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah. I do. I'll tell her.
She's so, like,
I haven't gotten to meet her yet, but...
Yeah?
We want to meet, yes, because I've helped her a lot with just little things, and I told her, I said, Patricia, don't ever give up. I said, because every single drop eventually fills that bucket.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I never thought of it like that.
It's true, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is.
Now,
I know right there at the end, and I told you this the other day, right at the end, whenever we started having all of our trouble, that he would try to get me to go to work with him at night. It was at night, and he ran a machine that, what do you call that? Backhoe?
Yeah.
Front end loader?
What do they call
it? Front end loader.
And he would try to get me to go to work with him. And it was like, no, I don't want to, you know, because what if he dug? And I didn't know about Carrie, that much about Carrie, until after we split up and I went to digging.
Yeah.
But, it was just like a feeling that I had.
Yeah.
You know, here we are arguing and stuff, and I'm not going to go to work with you. Might dig a hole and just throw me off in it. Nobody would have ever found me.
But did he ever mention that Carrie was, like, supposedly buried somewhere?
No. When he told me that she wanted to go to Mexico and be a sex slave, and when she went missing, he was telling me, you know, well, they need to question her daddy, or they should have questioned her daddy, or her ex-boyfriend, because that's where they found her car. Her car was parked in his driveway.
Yeah.
And he's a Mexican guy. That's what Cody said.
Yeah.
And he's a Mexican.
So
kind of implying that maybe the Mexican boyfriend got her to Mexico or whatever. But they've never found her car. Why would he tell me that? Well, I never really asked Cody any questions about it, because I could not picture Cody doing something like that. Because he was so... Like I said, I mean, he would never holler at me. He never put his hands on me.
Yeah. So, like, do you ever consider the possibility that he's totally innocent and it's totally a mistake, misunderstanding?
I have contemplated that, yes. Yeah. That maybe somebody else done it and point the finger at him.
Yeah.
You know, the man could be totally innocent.
People always assume it's the ex-boyfriend anyway, you know?
Right.
And they fought, too. That's what they say.
Well, he never told me anything about them fighting.
Just the last time anyone ever saw Carrie, they were having an argument. She was having an argument with Cody.
Well, the witness is there at the wagon wheel.
Yeah, so you think it's the wagon wheel, was a motel, is that it?
It was a saloon, motel. Okay. Like, there was a saloon on the end of the motel.
One seeming contradiction stuck out immediately. Janice's memory of that infamous party was that it was at the Wagon Wheel Motel, which is in West Tawakoni, not Quinlan or Hot Cove, although these places are all on or near Lake Tawakoni. I'm leaving it here so you have access to the same information I do, but I think it's possible that she was mistaken about the location. Remember, Janice wasn't actually there. She got this information from Cody, just like Brian did. So we have two versions of the story, one of the party happening in Hawk Cove, the other at the Wagon Wheel Motel in West Tawakoni. But Janice's version of the story is otherwise identical to the one Cody told Brian. Cody dancing with someone named Cactus, Carrie asking if he was going to sleep with her, and the drink to the face.
Who's Cactus?
It's one of the girls that he was dancing with the night that Carrie threw the drink in his face.
Did he tell you that, or did you hear that?
He told me that. He told me that story. He told me the story about the party, that they were all there, and he was dancing with Cactus. Carrie came in, and he danced a couple of dances with her, danced with Cactus, bought him a drink, and they were sitting there, and Carrie mentioned, or asked Cody, said, y'all are going to hook up, ain't y'all? You know, sleep with each other. And he said, yeah. He said, I intend to. And she threw the drink in his face.
What did he say after that?
That she left. That she left out. That she left out of whatever, the party, wherever it was at.
Patricia, Carrie's sister, just about everyone I've ever asked, finds it hard to believe that everything was fine after Carrie threw a drink in Cody's face. I'm sort of the same mind on that one. But Janice says that's one of the things we're not getting. Cody really did de-escalate situations like that.
Someone throws a drink in your face, like, it's no problem? I don't know.
Right, but that's why I'm saying he was so docile, and like even our little arguments that we would get into, like I said, it was over as quick as it started, and it was not mentioned again.
No, it's good to know.
But, I mean, there's got to be someone that was at that party
that remembers.
It's like I said, you know, they may be scared.
Because
this case has not been investigated, and I mean, it's just been swept under the rug, and it makes me wonder why, you know, why someone hasn't come forward and told what, because it's not going to be investigated.
Yeah.
And I mean, they might be afraid that something's going to happen to them. Part of me wants to believe that he didn't do it because he was a good man. I mean, he had a good heart. Cody had a good heart. And he never met a stranger, was always willing to help anybody do anything, regardless what it was. If it was get down and waller in the shit with you, you know, he'd do it. And just as friendly and kind to everybody. But I like to lost my mind whenever I come back to Texas, and
oh,
it drove me crazy. I like to went crazy in jail. You know, I've been to the pen twice, and whenever I went and spent those 97 days in jail, woo, it's the hardest time I ever done.
And this last one was after he did all that with you, right?
Well, I come down here to visit with the kids and grandbabies because we was having trouble. And when I felt it in my gut. I felt it so deep in my gut. I told him, I said, I'll never see you again. I told two of my friends that. I said, I have a bad feeling about this. And sure enough, it's just like he just shut the door and walked away. I mean, I loved him. I cared about him. And I guess that's why part of me wants to believe that, or hope and pray, you know, that he didn't do that, because he was a good man.
But one thing seems clear. Carrie was still on his mind enough to tell people about her 25-plus years later, between May 2014 and May 2015, which is months before Brian worked up the nerve to call Cody the first time. And yet, it would still be another year and a half before anyone from the Hunt County Sheriff's Office bothered to ask Cody anything about Carrie's disappearance. A detective named Sergeant Jeff Haynes traveled up to Tishomingo, Oklahoma, and started nosing around. He and Cody ended up in an interrogation room, and Haynes at one point accused Cody of murdering Carrie. But it was only one part of an interrogation that didn't end with Cody's arrest. In fact, the detective poses several theories and accusations, only one of which is that Cody murdered and buried Carrie. That interview is audio and video recorded. I hope it's needless to say that I tried everything to get a hold of that file, especially after we decided to turn what was then a short radio story into a multi-episode series and podcast. I sent an official request for a copy of the audio through the Texas Public Information Act. Predictably, the sheriff's office fought that and asked that the Office of the Attorney General exempt them from having to release the interview to KETR. That sort of sounds extreme when I say it out loud, but it's very common for police agencies to try and prevent information in an ongoing investigation from being released to the public. The Attorney General's office hasn't always taken Hunt County's side over ours, but that time they did. So, there wasn't any way to get that audio. At least, not from them. I thought of something else, too, which was getting it from the police station where they recorded the interview. I filed the appropriate request under the Oklahoma Public Information Act. It's a similar process. I was already patting myself on the back a few days later when I got a call from the Tishomingo Police Department.
I am calling in reference to the request that we received. We don't have a copy of that.
It turned out that my scheme was 6 months too late. They'd purged it from their system before I even thought to ask. Not even close. But, around that time, someone gave me something else. Something that could be even more informative than the interview file. I received the detective's notes about his interrogation of Cody. It's not a verbatim transcript, more like a narrative of what Sergeant Haynes considered to be highlights. So in that way, we get insight into what the detective was thinking at the time, or shortly thereafter. And there was this one line from the interview I really wanted to include in the podcast. Mostly for dramatic effect, I guess, but it mattered enough to Haynes to quote Cody on it, so it seems also justified. It's right at the start of 11 pages of notes. Here's the scene. Sergeant Haynes has arrived in Tishomingo, Oklahoma, and spent a few hours looking for Cody and talking to people who know him. Eventually, he gets a call from local police. Guess who just strolled into the police station asking about that cop who's been poking around town? Cody. So Haynes heads over, and the two end up in an interrogation room. And someone starts recording, and just like that, after 25 years, the detective is sitting in front of Carrie's ex-boyfriend for the first time ever. But before Haynes explains anything, he asks Cody if he can think of a reason why a detective from Texas might want to travel all this way just to meet him. Cody answers, "I know exactly why you're here. You're here about Carrie Parker." Buried is produced by Emma Anderson and me. Its executive producer is Jared Knight. Brad Davis composed the original theme music. Our photographer is Brittany Greider. Podcast cover art is by Crystal Sid. You can find updates between episodes on Facebook. Our page is at facebook.com/buriedradio. We're also on Twitter and Instagram. And our email address is buried@ketr.org. Special thanks to Ross Paletti, Kathy L. Alexander, and Susan Jin. Thanks also to Brandon S. Shelby, Katrina Pemberton, and Daniel W. Ray. And to the public information officers of the Van Zandt and Rockwall County Sheriff's Offices. This podcast is a production of member-supported 88.9 FM in Commerce, Texas. To support it and other programming, head over to ketr.org and click the donate button. And thanks.